founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome, welcome one and all to the FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. Another show is upon us. What episode is this? 18, I believe. Yeah, episode 18. This is technically our October version, but because we had the goblins out yesterday being Halloween, we decided to push the show off one day and go to November 1st. So bonus for all of you, because that means November you get two shows. So that's awesome. Yeah. So... We have a great show lined up again, of course, for you today. Really excited to bring our featured guest, who is Skylar Conover, into the show. She'll be calling about 12 after the hour, like we'd love to have our featured guest chime in with us at that time. Until then, though, why don't we can chat with you if you'd like. You can reach me here in the studio at 949-270-5953. You can always send me your email. The email for me directly is fshradiohost@gmail.com. I got that up and ready so I can try to respond best I can during the show. Or you can use the chat room through Blog Talk Radio. I know some don't always use that option. It's a great way to chime in with me, with the guest. I can pass your questions on to them through that chat room. It is a phenomenal tool to use to get in touch with the show. Also, you can follow the show. Go to fshsociety.org, at FSH Society on Twitter. I had some people ask me what is my Twitter handle. I can give that to you without a problem. That's at FSH Radio Host is my Twitter handle if you want to reach out to me that way. That's always another great option. So find me on Facebook. We're also still trying to get some of you guys to come together if you want to share your story on the StoryCorps project with the FSH Society. You can send me your email story. You know, you can email that to me. I can narrate it for you, fshradiohost@gmail.com. I'm hoping by the next show I can play a couple that we've started to create already, and we can add that in part of our break, so maybe make that a small bit of the topic so you can kind of see what that really is. The StoryCorps project, you know, there's a NPR radio kind of started that, and you can look up StoryCorps, you know, on Google, and people just kind of shared their stories. And going off that same premise, FSH Society thought, what a great idea. I agreed. We really wanted to start it when the Vegas conference was going on. I couldn't make it to that to facilitate it. So I thought, well, that doesn't have to be the only time you guys can, you know, share your story with me. You can do that anytime. So like I said, you can email it to me if you'd like. If you want, here's my direct number. If you want to, some have texted me, which is fantastic. If you want to, call me, maybe then we can set up a time if that's more comfortable. That number is 414-659-3392. So yeah, I put out my personal. I'm here for you. That's what the show is about. It's about support. It's about community. It's I guess call it a support group on Blog Talk Radio, right? If you want to call it that, we're here to support each other. Our guest tonight is going to be a lot of fun to talk to. I just feel it. It's got good energy about it. It's an interview here with Skylar Conover, Miss 2015 Wheelchair USA. She's going to share her journey with us, her diagnosis with FSH muscular dystrophy. She's become a national advocate about her married life, kids, recently acquired a service dog. I'm excited to hear about that. So there's a lot she's going to bring to the table, and I can't wait to talk with her. Last month, we had on Taylor Quigg, and if you missed that show, no problem. You can still play that after we're done with this one, of course, and you can listen to her phenomenal story and journey, a very emotional story, and I'm talking positive emotional. Someone that was kind of definitely hit while she was down a little bit, kind of hid the fact she had FSHD and kind of had this coming out about it and has reached out and helped so many people. And I know she's part of the support group, I believe, in Philadelphia. a chapter group there. So awesome. Next month, we'll have Amanda Rickard. She is a scientist, a patient advocate. You can start Googling her now if you'd like. And we're going to have her on the show. And we keep on building episodes from there. With that said, I had a fun weekend this past weekend. I was super excited because it was the Chicagoland chapter launch, and I was just I was super stoked because it was just a great opportunity to get back in touch with the guys down there. Guys meaning, you know, Dave and all them, and Ramsey, and met him again and their families, and it felt like it was even a larger community as they launched out officially the Chicagoland group. So I was super excited for Dave, met his wife, Brandy, and their families. And it's just even my brother came. He lives in the Chicago area, and he brought his energy there too. He came a little late, and I gave him grief for that, but he came, and I was loving the support. And it was just, I still have a good feeling about it. Dave Lucas has an amazing, amazing energy. If you want to be energized, go back to his episode when we had him on, once again, after this show, and listen to that on demand podcast with Dave Lucas as the featured guest, talking about his FSH journey and, creating the meeting group. It's now it's an official chapter. So it was great. And meeting friends that I started to create. Ramsey was there. He's a FSHer as well. We're going to have him on the show, I think, actually in January. He kind of cornered me, and I was glad he did, and said, hey, when am I going to be on the show? You know, when am I going to be one of your featured guests? He's in Plainfield, Illinois. Ramsey Shahid is going to come into studio. That's what he's going to attempt to do in January. So that's what I mean. We're building these shows. We're building these shows out. We're trying to get you guys jacked up for who we're coming and or who's coming to the show. So it was great to get in touch with these wonderful people. And it wasn't just that they launched this amazing thing, you know, that this was big support group. It was also the fact that they had phenomenal speakers. Dr. Nagar was there, which is Dave Lucas's doctor. He has referred her many, many times over, which has been amazing to help so many people. Mark Stone, the CEO of FSH Society, was there to talk. Beth Johnston was there as well. June Kinoshita was there to talk. It was awesome. And to have all that great energy in the room, it was good stuff. So I hope all the other big launches are going off that way. I think there was actually one today as well. If I quickly look, right, St. Louis member meeting and chapter launch happened today, 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. I think that's Eastern time. So do the math on the time, Tim, of what that is now. So congratulations to them launching it off as well. I was so inspired by the fact that these people are raising their hands to do these things. The fact that I had people asking about our podcast. And that's right, I said our podcast, and wanting to be a part of it and wanting to know where to listen. And, you know, the shows are always there on demand for you. We will start to generate two different avenues that you can listen to, try to get them on different apps so it's easier to find. I'm working on that as well, so you can kind of share the news. So, for instance, I am a huge podcast listener. I love listening to podcasts. There's some great ones out there. I use Podcast Addict, or Spotify, which is how I generate a lot of the sound you hear besides my voice with this show is through Spotify. And I guess I wanted to also make a sidebar and kind of share those podcasts that I use. So some things are baseball coach related for me because I am a baseball coach and I like to steal stuff from other coaches. That's how I get better. But John Gordon is a phenomenal inspirational speaker. He has a good podcast out there called Positive You. And I actually like the Tim Ferriss show. I can also maybe try to get myself on those. And so I can spread our story with them and maybe get on their podcast as a guest. So I'm efforting that as well to try to help network us out there so people know what this is, help donate to our cause. Because donation is obviously what we all are pushing for right now, trying to raise a lot of money to hit our goal of the 2025 cure. We need money for that, right? We need to help finance that, which leads me to this next part of our intro for today's show. We have this is a little bit of taking out from Mark Stone's statement. So these are kind of his words that he has out there, all of which you can find on fshsociety.org. And he says, and this is titled, "The Time Is Now. We have a clear and certain direction, and the members of our board of directors have demonstrated confidence in our plan by pledging $400,000 and challenging all of our members to match their gift. Please help us meet and surpass this goal by donating as generously as you can before December 31st. It's going to take all of us to cross the finish line, but with your continued support, we will reach our shared goal, treatments for our families by 2025. Working with you in passion and purpose, Mark Stone." So a little bit of a quote through the airwaves to you, a little more inspiration. So listen to the inspirational podcast I've recommended. Read Mark Stone's words. Donate some cash. Let's totally meet and surpass this goal. I know we can do that. And with the help of all these great chapter groups started out there, it's going to even unify us even more. So there's so much good things in the works. I really thank Dave Lucas and his wife, Brandy, for putting that phenomenal Chicagoland event. So thank you is not enough. I know it takes a lot of work. And I've been inspired to that degree now where I will start a Milwaukee, that's where I'm out of here, a Milwaukee group as well. So those that are in my neck of the woods here, I will not abandon the Chicago group, of course, Dave, don't worry. They'll be there sometimes to participate, help you fundraise, help with your events. Absolutely, I'm all in. And we're going to start doing the same thing up here in Milwaukee, just about an hour and a half north of you. So a lot of fun, a lot of things in store. So why don't we take our first break of the show. We come back. We're going to bring in our featured guest, Skylar Conover. We're going to share her story. Super excited to have this guest on. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD. And share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Show FSH Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here, taking the time out of your busy life, sitting down and listening through the internet radio waves, as they say, and being here for our November 1st show. Normally would have been on yesterday, but as I said, the Halloween day maybe scared us all off and thought it'd be safer to hold off one more day. No, just kidding. Just want to be more available to you guys out there in case you had Halloween parties, events with the kids out there, trick-or-treating and whatnot. So we bring in this show to you on Thursday the 1st. So that means you get two shows in November, so it's going to be exciting as well. Next month's show, or later this month, we'll have Amanda Rickard on. She's a scientist, patient advocate, so look her up. More to come about her profile on Facebook and Twitter and those places. You can follow the show on fshsociety.org, at fshsociety on Twitter. You can email me if you'd like, fshradiohost@gmail.com. That's direct, right to me. Call in if you'd like. preferably after our featured guest here, who she's waiting on hold, so we're going to get to her soon here. That number to call us is 949-270-5953. And don't forget to use the chat room. Dave Lucas is in the chat room. Hello, Dave. I'm glad he's here. And guest 812. So you can type in your name. You can be anonymous. Do what you'd like. But the chat room is there for you to interact with us all here. So why don't we bring in our featured guest? This is a phenomenal human being and person. I'm glad we bring in her story. Skylar Conover is her name. She is, I don't know if she loves this title, but she's definitely earned that title. A 2015 Miss USA Wheelchair. We bring her now live on the FSH Society Radio Show. Hello, Skylar. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad you could join us. I know you were fighting a little bit of a bug, and I know I was holding my breath, hoping that your voice would be there for us today, and I'm sure glad to hear that lovely voice coming through.
Yeah, it's a little scratchy, but we're getting there. We're on antibiotics, and so hopefully on the road to recovery.
Awesome. Yeah, antibiotics are good that way. You know, it's like, heal me quickly, please. Let's get on with our lives.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, thanks again, yeah, for taking the time, coming here on the show, well, you know, over Skype or your phone or whatnot, whatever device you're using to call us in. But we love the fact that you're taking the time to share your story. And that's usually where I love to begin with our featured guests, is that, you know, when they come in, we all really want to know about you. We want to know about, you know, maybe where you're from or your FSH story. So what can you tell us about yourself, Skylar?
Absolutely. I am one that, you know, I had that typical childhood where I was involved in every sport you could think of, softball, soccer, did Boy Scouts, cheerleading, dancing, everything, and was very active. And in March of 2005, officially got the diagnosis of muscular dystrophy. It was actually my cheerleading coach, when I was cheering for Pro Spirit, he looked at my tumbling. He's like, "Your tumbling and your technique is great, but my arms would collapse and I would fall on my head." And it led us down the road of scoliosis and mild scoliosis. And as we know, with FSH, we do have symptoms of mild scoliosis. And so that started the questioning of what is happening. And it took 2 years to actually find out that diagnosis, because my mom was adopted and we had no medical history. We had no idea FSH ran in her family. So it was all news to us. It was a foreign language and didn't know what it was. And, you know, in March 2005, when I finally got that diagnosis, you know, a lot of doctors said it was all in my head, all the symptoms. I was a middle child and I wanted that attention and was seeking that attention. So I was making up pain. And it was a relief that it wasn't all in my head. There was a story behind it, and there was a cause behind all these symptoms and all the pain that I was actually experiencing.
So you said you were diagnosed in 2005, not 1905, because the way the doctor said that, I mean, that makes me think, you know, that just seems to be kind of, I don't know, and forgive me if I'm overstepping, but that just seems to be a little insensitive that he said that your behavior was because of middle child seeking attention.
Yes, and that's what was really frustrating. My mom tried to reach out and find her biological parents to see if anything was wrong or if we had any history of any medical diseases in our family at all, because that's what they wanted to blame it on, because all the tests that they were testing came back as normal and didn't see any abnormalities. And so it took, when I collapsed on the floor, I had a huge muscle spasm and was care flighted to Children's Hospital and here in Dallas, and got the chief of neurology that specialized in muscular dystrophy. And she took one look at me and she's like, "I guarantee you this is what you have. We need to do a muscle biopsy." And it came back positive for FSH.
So did you have any symptoms, you know, prior to that, prior to those, you know, events that happened on that gym floor? Was there any signs that you can recall that you would have went, "Oh, that's it, that makes sense," like kind of making some connections?
Prior to that, you know, I always had shoulder pain. I had issues lifting my arms above my head. And I would just we would be going to the amusement park or going out and doing something fun, and I would tell my mom, I don't want to go, and I'm laying on the bed just crying in tears and in pain because I hurt so bad. And my mom would not accept the reality of doctor saying the pain's in her head, like she's not wanting to go to amusement parks, she's
right.
not wanting to do anything fun because she's in so much pain. And so, and I was always a clumsy child. I always fell, and we didn't know why, and I still fall to this day. At least it's at least a daily routine that I fall. That's just how FSH is, and you just live with it. But, you know, looking back, it's like, oh, that's why, you know, it was harder for me to, like, get dressed, and my arms couldn't reach up, and trying to do cheerleading exercises of why my legs wouldn't be as strong as my peers.
Mm-hmm. So how old were you? It sounds like then you were a teenager when you were diagnosed.
I was 15 years old when I was diagnosed. So I was right entering into my freshman year of high school when I was diagnosed. And that's a time where, you know, a lot of teenage girls are trying to find their way to fit in. And here I am getting this life-changing disease put on to me, trying to go into high school, already trying to figure out who I am. And then here's this on top of it. And
did you
so
get,
high school was a very hard time.
That was exactly where I was leading. Is I know I didn't have FSH to deal with, you know, the knowledge of it, or I wasn't affected by it to the extreme that you're talking about in my teenage years. I had other things the kids could pick on me about. So I can only imagine with this kind of, and I'm, you know, this kind of struggle you were dealing with. Trying to figure out what it was, looking for answers, probably really frustrated. And you're right. And then there's the other things that a teenage girl goes through, like you said, fitting in, your body's changing, all these things are happening, and then you add this on top. It's kind of like fuel to the fire. So how was that freshman year like for you then in high school? You know, what can you share about that?
Absolutely. My freshman year, you know, at first I was in that whole denial stage and I didn't want to accept it. I thought doctors are crazy. Okay, great. I don't know what this is. I'm just going to ignore it and continue on with my life. And because at that time I was still walking and I could pretty much seem normal to my peers around me. But emotionally,
right.
I was not there. I was in that denial stage and just not wanting to accept it and just not deal with it. I was on the varsity drill team my freshman year and went all the way up into my junior year of high school. It was not until my junior year is when I really started seeing more of a progression and starting to get weaker and not being able to walk long distances. And our high school, I went to Allen High School, and from one end of the hall to the school to the other is a mile long. And so that took a toll on my body. So I had to start using a power chair to help me start getting around in between classes. My graduating class, we were two less than 12,000. And so walking around the hallways is very crowded. If people bump into me,
mm-hmm.
I was on the floor. So it got to the point where it was a hazard for me to walk and safely navigate the school. So I had to accept using a power wheelchair, and that came with that body image and, you know, now seeing myself in a wheelchair and not wanting to. And I lost a lot of friends that I thought I had no longer talked to me as soon as I started using a power chair. And I don't think, looking back on it, you know, at that age, you know, it was easy to blame them, but, you know, looking back on it, that's a hard stage in life, and not knowing how to navigate it and having a friend that all of a sudden seemed normal to using a chair and not knowing the right questions to ask, not knowing how to involve me into outings anymore and wondering, well, is it wheelchair accessible or not? That's not what normal teenagers think about. And so
right.
I became isolated and went into a deep depression. And my junior, senior year, I was in a great depression and even tried to commit suicide a couple of times because I did not want to live with a disability. I thought my life was over. I didn't think I could contribute anything. I didn't think that I would achieve anything. And for reasons or not, God decided he was not done with my story and did not let me be successful in my suicidal attempt, and I'm still here. And now I see where his plan was and how I've advocated and been a voice for people with disabilities, because also growing up, I was dyslexic. So this is not the first disability I had put on it in my life. In third grade, I was diagnosed with dyslexia, and I hit that really well as well. And so part of my platform when I started to run for Miss Wheelchair USA is, you know, the visible and invisible disabilities, because there's so many disabilities out there that we can't see, and there's so many that we can't. And so trying to advocate and actually, like, raise awareness to our communities to educate about that, because I refuse to believe that a lot of people are ignorant. I think they just don't know how to ask those questions, and they feel uncomfortable asking those questions. And I wanted to let them know, please ask me those questions. I will tell you, I'd rather you ask them there and assume things that aren't true.
That is a lot to deal with as a young person. And I think a lot of teenagers that are dealing with this right now, I'm glad that you came, you know, on this show, and hopefully they're listening. Maybe they're going through a tough time with this. I can only imagine. Like I said, I didn't have to deal with this part of my life, you know, until I was, you know, recently in my 40s. I can't imagine having to take this weight, this burden of this, at that younger age. I definitely would not have been ready for it. So the fact that you got through that, and I know that you said, you know, you had suicide attempts. It was depression, dark times, no question. I'm glad, you know, that you're here to tell your story. There's no doubt about it, because I think it. I'm hoping that it is reaching out to those people, that this is affecting them emotionally, you know, a great deal. I've asked a lot of guests. Yeah, and I've asked a lot of past guests. I said, does this affect you? Do you think more physically or emotionally? So I guess I'll ask you that. I mean, you know, it might be an easy answer for some, but I still would love to hear, you know, your take. Maybe it's changed, you know, in the course of your life dealing with this disease, you know. But I guess what seems to have it, has it taken its toll on you more?
I think for me more, it would be the emotional standpoint of it, because it's a roller coaster. It's up and down, up and down. You go through like where you're going through a huge decline stage, and then you'll level out, and then you'll be fine for a year, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months. You never know how long you're stable for. And then you decline again. And so you're always grieving the loss of an ability that you had once, and then you got worse. And so emotionally, that is hard on me, I know for sure. And just trying to deal with each progression of the disease. And so, you know, you have the physical aspects of, you can, you know, lifting your arms up, trying to reach things. But for me, as being a woman and knowing at such a young age, I wanted a family. I love kids, and I wanted that. But in my mind, I was like, who would love somebody that's in a wheelchair? Who would want somebody that's in a wheelchair when they could have somebody that's able-bodied? And that took the emotional toll on me, because I knew I wanted a family. I knew I wanted kids, but wasn't sure how I was going to achieve that. And so even at 15, doctors were like, you don't need to be thinking about that yet. But as a 15-year-old girl and knowing that I wanted a family, it did weigh on me. And so it's always that emotion standpoint of going through the disease process more than physically dealing with the disease.
Yeah, I think that's a very good and unique viewpoint. I can see why. Even at that age, that younger age, you were already looking down the road. You know, a lot of young people have that, right? They have goals. They're already thinking, especially those that, when I remember when I was young like that, I thought I was virtually indestructible. So, if you know, you just assume you're going to live a certain amount of time at least. So I have these certain things I'd like to achieve or have happen in my life. So you're right. When something this large looms and comes in, it kind of disrupts any plan you had. that can send you into that dark place. So,
you are no longer indestructible.
Correct. Correct. Here's a here's a slap of reality at a very young age. You know, real life stuff. Now, you mentioned that your mom's adopted, so there wasn't really any line of family history deciding where this came from. I'll ask you to speak for her. Obviously, she's not here to talk to us, but how did your mom handle it from the point of diagnosis? From what you could tell from a mother's standpoint.
Absolutely. At first, when I was diagnosed, everybody in the family kind of went their separate ways, and we didn't talk about it together. Everybody was kind of in that denial stage, and I didn't know this at the time, but years later, when I have talked to my mom and she's opened up to me a lot about it, she felt very guilty that she's the one who passed on the gene to me. She felt like she had to be strong for me and couldn't grieve with me because she was trying to be strong for me, and she had that guilt, and it was her responsibility that she gave it to me, and it was her fault. And so she took a lot of that guilt and went through the depression as well, because we didn't grieve this process together, and it caused a big turmoil within my parents' relationship and trying to deal with me and my mom going to doctor's appointments with me and trying to be supportive of me. And my little sister was 7 years younger than me. She was in kindergarten when I was getting all this medical and this treatment and trying to figure out what was going on. And so she acted out more because she wanted that attention, because a lot of attention focus is normally on the baby. And it switched and it changed to being on me, and it caused a huge problem between me and her relationship, because she blamed me that my parents were more focused on me and my health than they were on her. And my older sister took the role of, joking around and being the clown. And, anytime I would fall in the mall, I remember we were walking in the mall one time and I just fell, and I was so embarrassed and was welling up and starting to cry because I was just that embarrassed of it. And my sister took hold of my arm and started doing lunges up and down the mall. I was like, oh, you want to do a lunge competition? Let's do it. And just made it into a joke and made light of it, so I wouldn't feel bad, and took all the attention right off of me and put it onto her.
Wow.
And so it changed our huge family dynamic, and it still affects our family dynamic today, and, how everybody deals with it differently. And that's one thing I do regret, is we didn't grieve and talk about it as a family when we were first diagnosed, because it doesn't just affect the person that's diagnosed. It affects the whole entire family.
So would you say then that are you close with both your sisters?
I'm closer to my older sister than I am my younger sister. There is still a lot of hurt between her and I, and her blaming me. And, she has grown up with it, and, she's grown out of a lot of things. But it has still impacted how close we are in our relationship.
Yeah, I think that's part of the disease that isn't really talked about too much. Is how does it affect the people that are in your life, is your siblings and your parents. I definitely can agree with you when it comes to the mother's point of view. I felt I got that reaction from my mother, where she, when I told her, I could tell she was shielding her emotions from me and not really revealing what was going on. And as conversations went on, throughout the weeks and, months after the diagnosis, I could definitely tell, I think she felt a little guilty that, why didn't I catch this? Why didn't I notice? And the thing that I always would say was, well, it's okay you didn't, because then maybe things would have been different. I wouldn't have played football. I wouldn't have done things. She would have been the mother to protect your child and shield. No, you can't do that stuff. So I think everything happens, for certain reasons, of course. And I know it is very difficult, on the parents feeling like they're passing this on, to their kids. I mean, I kind of deal with that guilt a little bit as I look at my two boys. Is this something I passed on to them? Would I have had them if I would have known I had this before? It's all those things that enter your mind that you can't necessarily ignore. You have to deal with those feelings, but you have to make sure that they don't turn, from what I'm getting, I'm not a psychologist or anything, that you have to turn those feelings into some type of, you know, positive reassurance that trust, you know, trust in how your life is going. Now,
absolutely, you so hit that right on the nail.
So take us now to, okay, you were this teenager struggling with this. You survived it, though. You got through the other side. And now you're advocate. You're, you know, come on, you're 2015, you know, Miss Wheelchair USA. So how did you get from those days in 2005 to 10 years later, 2015, having that honor?
You know, a lot of people ask me that, and that's probably one of the hardest questions for me to answer. I had my faith, and I just kept living the life at that time. You know, when I got this diagnosis, my world stopped, but the rest of the world didn't. And so I finally got through those stages of, okay, I have to keep going on with life as well and continue doing what I'm doing. And, you know, with the diagnosis, it wouldn't have led me down the path of my college career and getting my bachelor's in rehabilitation studies. I took this and saw what I went through, saw what my family went through, and wanted to help others that was dealing with the same thing. And so I went into rehabilitation counseling to, you know, learn about different diseases, learn about how to help the family in that. And, you know, that became a huge passion of mine. Like, everything happens for a reason. I truly believe that, and I live by that. And if it wasn't for my FSH, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. It wouldn't have led me down the path of rehab studies. It wouldn't have led me past to rehab counseling to help others achieve that. And so I forget how I heard about the organization, but I heard about Miss Wheelchair Texas. That is the American side. There's two pageant organizations. There's a Miss Wheelchair America side and Miss Wheelchair USA side. And
okay.
Miss Wheelchair Texas is hosted in Houston. That's on the American side. And I ran for that. I became first runner up and had my platform. And I found out I really loved it. I really loved speaking. I loved talking to people and educating others about different disabilities and to ask questions, because I saw a trend that, you know, it's all about our attitudes towards everything. And if we can't change our attitudes for things, we can't make any change in our society. And everybody's talking about, you know, we need to make things more accessible. Yes, we do. I agree with that. But if we can't educate our community about the challenges that we face having whether it's a visible disability or invisible disability, then they can't be aware of those things that we need in society. So it has to start there. And after that, I heard about Miss Wheelchair USA and decided to run for that. I won Miss Wheelchair Texas USA in, I believe it was February of 2015. And then later we went on to nationals that was held in Ohio, and I won the title of Miss Wheelchair USA. I was totally shocked and loved having this platform to be able to go across the whole United States and be able to talk to people and raise that awareness that I just have this passion for, because I want to make a difference. And I always said if I could at least change one person's life and touch one person's life and their attitude regarding things, then I'm grateful. And if it does more, then I'm even more grateful.
Tell us about the process of the competition, because I assume it's still a competition based platform, right? To kind of, you know, win that or be crowned at that.
It is. We have to come up with our own motto, which mine was "Alter Attitudes to Conquer Change," and we have to come up with our mission. And my mission was to educate and raise awareness for visible and invisible disabilities. And we have to talk about that and what we're going to do to achieve it. And I have set up many different disability awareness workshops with teachers, with colleges, with youth ministries, to have them experience a little of what it's like to have a disability and set up visual impairments, mobility impairments, finger dexterity, all different types of disabilities, and have them experience that for 5 minutes, just for 5 minutes. And they rotate around stations, and then afterwards we have a Q&A, and they get to ask those questions and those hard questions of, you know, well, how do you deal with this? How does that make you feel? And how would you think if your life was like this? And get them to really kind of understand of walking in someone else's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And not being so judgmental. There might be something else going on with that individual that they don't want to reveal yet, or they don't feel comfortable revealing yet.
Was there, I see pictures, you know, of the competition that you've had posted, and obviously they're available out there on Google Images. When I was poking around and researching you, Skylar, okay? That's what I was doing. And I saw these awesome pictures of you with the gown and the crown on and all that. What did that moment feel like when they announced the winner and it was your name?
You know, it's so cliche of like the pageant movies that you have and like the gasping of, oh my gosh, but it really is like that. I mean, it was just shocking. You work so hard in doing all these like volunteer outreach, because it all is about, you know, we have our opening number, we have our platform speech that we have to give and present, and it could only be so long, and you had to get everything in that time. And then you have your onstage interview questions that they ask you, but it also goes beyond that of looking at your volunteer involvement out in your community. What do you do? What do you want to do? So it's not just about speaking, and you actually have to prove you're out there doing these things. And so, you know, I did a lot of my disability workshops. I also do sign language, and I would advocate for that disability of, you know, asking different sports programs if I could sign the national anthem. And a lot of times, like, oh, you want to sing it? I'm like, please don't have me sing it. I have the worst voice ever. I will sign it with my hands, but I will not vocalize it and sing it. And so I did a lot of those events, you know, just showing, look, you know, we do have the deaf community that's out there. And sign language has always been a thing that I've loved. I think it's beautiful, and I've learned it. I wanted to be a sign language interpreter. And I did that when I was going at Collin College. I was going to a local community college and learn sign language, be an interpreter. However, you know, I was able to pass that, but I had the difficulties of keeping my arm up to sign the amount of time that they needed me to sign. Mm-hmm. So that limited me in to join that career because of the disease. But I'm able to have conversations with individuals, and I'll go to restaurants and I'll see somebody that's signing and that's trying to order, and I'll go up and sign with them and help them. And, you know, they're just so grateful. And, you know, just like anybody with a disability, like, we have to accept that help. And that's one of the hardest things to do sometimes, is accept the help. And it's even hard for me to accept it. I've gotten better, but it's still hard. It's our pride.
Right. I hear you. Yeah. Right. It's kind of admitting, it feels like sometimes I think you're kind of admitting defeat, you know, and you don't want to.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I should still be able to do this. Right. I get it.
Absolutely. Which led me down the path of a service dog, because I hated asking other people for help. And I grew up going to NDA camp and growing up around service dogs, but I was at that point where, oh, I'm still walking, you know, I don't need a service dog yet. There's someone worse off than me that needs one more. And it came from a friend of mine, Brian, who had Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and he had a service dog. He's like, Skylar, you can't look at it like that. Muscular dystrophy progresses so quickly or so slowly, you don't know. And so you need to get on the list and apply, because it will change your life. And I just kept pushing it back.
Because it goes back to that stubbornness. Did you feel like if I get a service dog, once again, it's like admitting defeat?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
It's that circle of doubt. And I finally did apply. I took his advice. I applied, and And now I have a wonderful service dog that I got through Canine Companions for Independence. And we have been a service team actually come November 5th or 6th, I believe. We've been a service team for 2 years.
Wow. What kind of dog is it?
She is a cross between a lab and a golden retriever. Canine Companions will normally always do a crossbred. They have found that the best success rate is through the crossbred.
Wow. Okay. Is it mostly in that crossbreed of those two breeds?
Yes, it's a lab and a golden. Absolutely.
Lab and a golden. Oh, man. It speaks to my heart, especially when you say the golden retriever side of the breed, because we had a golden retriever for 13 years, and we just had to put her down a couple months ago. And so it's still tough for me. So I can imagine how awesome that must be to have a companion like that and then have it be a service dog. What is the name of the dog?
Her name is Hedda. Now, with Canine Companions, they breed them and raise them from birth. They have dogs that they pick because of the right temperament, and they breed them especially for service dogs. They don't take rescues. It's all through their breeding program. And puppy raisers will raise them for 18 months, and then they go into advanced training at a center location facility. There's, I think, 5 or 6 around the whole United States. And they go to advanced training with professional trainers to learn advanced commands that will help us in the end. And then once they're 2 years into the process, 2 to 3 years, we then go to training for 2 weeks to learn how to handle the dog and what are the commands, because the dog knows everything, but we don't. And I've never had a dog and never, well, okay, we had a teacup chihuahua. I don't really count her as a dog growing up because she was a little rat. So taking care of a big dog was worrisome to me, and especially being in a wheelchair. And I had those questions, well, how am I going to do this? And they work with you, and they're always there to help you. And so I was matched up with Hedda because they knew her temperament. They knew her behaviors. And it's a long process to go through of applications of telling about yourself, what kind of lifestyle you live in, and they match you up perfectly. Their matches are so great, and everybody they pair you with, like, you're like, wow, like, I could see that and why that's a pair, because we worked with 10 dogs, and only 7 of them got matched with a team. And you know, there's some dogs I was like, oh my gosh, please don't match me with that one. That one is so crazy. I don't think I could handle that one. But they worked great for other individuals. And so CCI is one that care other matches and really thinks about it long and hard because they want it to be successful.
Mm-hmm. How long does the application process then take? Oh, I'm sorry. I was just wondering how.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, how long does it take when you, like you said, your friend, you know, suggested that you start the process, filling out the application and, you know, getting the ball rolling to put your name on the list. How long did that take then from the time you did that to when you got Hedda?
So there's a couple of things. So there's 2 organizations that I know of that provide service dogs free of charge to the recipient. It was Canine Assistance, which are located out in Georgia. And I applied to them first because that's where Brian had his dog from. I was on the wait list for 7.5 years. And
wow.
I was still on the wait list. I also tried to apply for Canine Companions for Independence, which they are main based out of California. But they were not accepting applications because their wait list was already long. So it wasn't until I was actually Miss Wheelchair Texas, I went to the Veteran Games here in Dallas, and Canine Companions had a booth set up saying, hey, Texas is building their very own CCI facility out in Irving, Texas, and this is only going to be for Texas recipients because they were getting so many recipients from Texas. And so they built this facility, and they're like, we are now accepting applications. So that day I went home and applied, And from the day that I applied for CCI, it was about a year by the time they called me and saying, hey, you're totally approved, and now we're just waiting for a dog. So it was about a year and 3 months from the time I applied to the time I went to team training to get my dog.
Wow.
So it just depends, and I had to end up calling the other organization saying, hey, you could take my name off the list because I have been approved by another organization.
So then can we plug one of the – is there a site that you remember? Was it a website that kind of started the ball rolling for you if someone wants to, you know, go a little step further and maybe start the process themselves?
Yes. For Canine Companions for Independence, you could go to www.cci.org, and you'll click on Apply for a Dog, and they'll ask you questions of just generic questions of, you know, well, do you have a disability? What would you like the dog to do for you? And go through questions, and then they go from there and saying, okay, yes, you qualify, and then they'll send you a huge application to fill out more details. And then you'll go through your doctor, and then you'll do a phone interview, and then you'll do an in-person interview, and then you'll go eventually on the wait list to go to team training. So there's a couple of different steps to go to, but to get started, you go to cci.org and apply for a dog, and that's how you get that application going for that organization.
Nice. I am half looking into it as we speak. And yes, it's a nice website. So I definitely think that, yeah, those that are interested in it, cci.org, that is the official plug there. Because, you know, I am a huge, you know, dog fan. I love dogs, grew up with them. And the fact that if they can help you, help someone that, you know, needs this assistance, why not? I mean, that's awesome. So how do you get along with Hedda in the house, as in with the rest of the family?
Yeah, so a lot of times, you know, when I was going through this process and when they said, hey, you're going to team training, I was just getting involved in my relationship that I am now with my fiance, and he had two kids, and I'm like, well, how is all this going to work? Like, everything's changing. We just got engaged, and now I got to disappear for 2 weeks to go train with a dog that I've been on a wait list for a year before I met him. And so, you know, we talked to him about it, and he was completely fine and was totally like, this is great and wonderful. And with Hedda, she has changed my life where I don't have to rely on other people to do things for me. Like, I have a hard time taking off my shirt due to my arms.
Mm-hmm.
And with Hedda, I could tell her to tug, and she will pull off my shirts for me and help take those off. Another great one that, you know, why I applied was when I was in college, I was taking night classes. And during night classes, the campuses are normally quiet. And I went to the bathroom, and I ended up falling and got stuck between my wheelchair and the wall and the toilet. And I couldn't get up. And I was by myself and was just at the mercy of waiting for someone to come find me and notice that I was missing from class. And I was probably there for about maybe 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, that doesn't seem like a long time, but when you're fallen and you need help, that seems like an eternity. And so one of the commands that Hedda can do is called the speak command. And if I tell her to speak, she will continue to bark until I tell her to be quiet. And so she will alert people. Normally when you hear a dog barking in a call, it's that's abnormal and you go investigate. And so she's able to alert people that, hey, something's going on, I need help. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of her great things that, you know, even in my house now, I take – anytime I go to the shower, I take her with me because my fiance can't hear me over the kids and the ruckus going around in the house that I tell her to speak. I fell in the shower and actually put a hole in our shower, but Hedda was there with me barking, and my fiance came in running to come help because he knew something was wrong.
Right.
And so that has been a huge lifesaver for me, and that comfort of knowing I am not alone. I have someone there by my side that can get help for me.
Wow.
And so that's one of her greatest things. I do love that she can do for me.
So obviously it's been a huge plus to have her in your life, and it sounds like the family loves her around as well because she is a huge help, part of the family, I can only imagine. You said that with your fiancé, he has two kids, so then you know, basically a family of four, right? So when the kids are there, how are they with Hedda?
They absolutely love her. They know the difference of when we're at home, you know, she doesn't have her vest on, she's not working, but she listens to me. If I call her, she will immediately ignore all the kids and my fiance and come straight to me. And we've even tested this out of, you know, because my soon-to-be husband, we're getting married in March. He wrestles around with Hedda, and Hedda loves playing with him. I'm like, oh, well, Hedda doesn't like to play with me, but she knows that I can't play rough with her and that he can. But if he's playing with her and I call her over, she will immediately ignore him and come straight to me because she knows who she's supposed to listen to. And it's really amazing that she could distinguish between that. And if I call her for help, a lot of times, you know, if I am walking around the house and I'm having a good day, I drop things. And, you know, my back, I have severe back pain, and trying to bend over to pick things up is just a hassle. And so I drop things, I call Hedda over, and I tell her to get it, and she gets so excited, and she loves picking things up. She loves her job. She loves what she does, and that's where Canine Companions are so awesome with their dogs, is they don't force a dog to work. If in advanced training, the dog shows that, you know, they don't like working, they will release the dog and give it to the puppy raisers, or there's a list that if you want a well-obedient dog, you could get on the list to get a retired or a change of career dog is what we call them, that ones that don't graduate because they don't force their dogs to work. Our dogs love to work, and the ones that are successful at graduating, they love their job. We don't force them to do anything that they don't want to do. And you could just see how happy Hedda is when I ask her to do things, and she jumps right on it. And her favorite thing to do is take off my socks, and she'll play with them. And I don't know why, but that's just her favorite thing to do.
So she's still a dog, and she still likes to have fun. That's awesome. Yeah, and it sounds like so.
Absolutely.
The reward also for her, though, is helping you, and that is, like you said, it's, she loves to work. She loves to do those things for you. Loves to do things for you. Just be that service. That's beautiful. That's awesome.
All she requires is pets and kisses and loves and cuddles and snuggles. But she knows the difference when her vest is on and we're out in public and we're working. And my kids know that, you know, don't pet her like you would at home because she is working.
Right.
She's working for mommy, and they know that. And I was so amazed. We just went to Fright Fest at Six Flags, and with all the scary creatures, I had Hedda with me, and she paid no attention to any of them and just was a rock star.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a good test. She wasn't freaked out.
It was. I was a little worried about
it
because I knew it would be crowded, and I knew there'd be like scary things, and it was so funny watching these people because you're then reminded they are kids that are working because they got so excited over a dog. They're like, oh my gosh, it's a dog. It took the scariness out of it. But then there were some that would try to purposely scare Hedda, and she paid no attention to them. And I'm like, she's not going to pay attention to you because this is what they're trained for. In daring training, the puppy raiser's job is to get them out into different environments to socialize them, to get used to all this. So we don't have to deal with that because we take them everywhere with us. And they are well-mannered and well-behaved. And that's how you tell a true service dog from these fake service dogs that are out there.
Mm-hmm. So how do people know to avoid or, you know, if they have a fake service dog? I mean, are you saying that they're not trained properly, hence they're fake, or people are trying to pass them off as service dogs?
People try to pass them off as service dogs. You could go on Amazon and type in service dog vest, and you could order a service dog vest.
Oh, my goodness.
And you could get patches that says emotional support dog. And they have been through no training at all. They have had dogs that out in public that's wearing a vest that has come and tried to attack Hedda because they're not truly a service dog. They have had no proper
right.
training at all. But in a lot of restaurants and businesses, they're like, well, they don't want to allow service dogs in there because they have had
sure.
too many frauds. And
right.
that's where there's been a huge debate right now going on. Well, what, how can we limit this? How can we stop this? And, you know, what really can we do about it?
Right. So what is the consensus? Is it maybe something with the vest that it has to be a certain kind that you can't just buy on Amazon, or you know, is that a possible solution?
It would be nice if Amazon and different organizations didn't sell the vest, that you would actually have to go through obedience classes and go through an organization that provides the vest and everything for you. You know, there's been talk about getting ID cards for them. However,
mm-hmm.
that also takes away the rights of the ADA and not asking too many invasive questions and regarding
right.
the disability, because right now you can only ask two questions. Is that a certified service dog? And what tasks
mm-hmm.
does it do for you? Those
mm-hmm.
are the only two things they're allowed to ask. And we're not required to carry an identification card for them. And so that's what it's so hard to pass right now. And there's so many things that are going on in discussion and topics about what can we do. And we're still
right.
trying to figure that out.
Hmm. Well, Scholar, I got one more question for you. And I'm glad that you came on today. You shared a lot of great information, a wide variety of topics we covered. But lastly, I wanted to ask you, I guess, what is the advice you would give someone that maybe is listening that's dealing with a diagnosis that's happened just recently? You know, they're trying to wrap their heads around this.
The best advice I can say is get plugged in. Get plugged into a support group. Get plugged into the FSA Society. Get plugged in and talk to other individuals that have this disease, because that is where you're going to get your most knowledge from. You're going to be able to connect with those individuals because they've been there. They've been through it. They know what you're going through and can help you navigate. So get plugged in. Don't be scared to, you know, rely on different equipment and, you know, the body image of things. Like, you have to do what's best for you, and it helps you get more energy by using a manual chair, by using a cane, by using a power chair. Whatever you need to use, don't hesitate to use it. Get a service dog if it helps you not feel like you're relying on other people. Don't be afraid to use things that are out there for equipment.
That's a good message. I think it all comes down to don't let fear guide the way, right? Try to overcome it the best you can and use the tools at your disposal. People, you know, like you said, equipment, service dogs, it's all out there. So I appreciate you, Skylar, for stopping in and telling us your story. It's phenomenal. I think you've helped a wide array of people today, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you having me and just being able to share my story and know that you can live a typical life and have a family and have kids if that's what you desire. And you don't know how they're going to come. And mine came with my fiance, and I love them dearly. They see me as mommy, and I'm mommy to them. And it makes me so proud that, you know, all it takes is love. It doesn't matter if you're in a chair. It doesn't matter if you have a disease. It doesn't matter what's going on. As long as you could give a child love, that's all they need.
Awesome. Thanks, Skylar. You have a good night.
Thank you so much.
That's Skylar Conover. So if you're not inspired by that, folks, that's amazing. I think she helped everything from someone in their teenage years dealing with this, battling this, wrapping their minds around it, all the way to somebody that maybe is, you know, a little stubborn in their ways. They don't want to ask the help, and maybe they need that service dog. Maybe need that extra thing. And she had a great message there, overcoming body image with this, all those things we talked about. I loved it. So I'm really glad that she had the time to come on and tell us those great stories and offer us some awesome advice. Let's take our last break. We'll come back. We'll close up shop by getting into a little bit of FSH Society news. If you have any comments, questions, you want to call in, we can do that too. 949-270-5953 is the FSH Society Radio show number. We'll be right back. You're listening to FSH Society Radio.
I'm Max Adler, and I played Dave Karofsky on the TV series Glee. Growing up, I saw firsthand how devastating muscular dystrophy can be. My mother and my grandmother both had it, a type called facioscapulohumeral, or FSHD. Without a cure, my family and I stood by helplessly as they were robbed of being able to do the simplest everyday tasks like chew their food, reach for a cup on a high shelf, or walk unsupported. FSHD is one of the most common muscular dystrophies. It attacks your face, your shoulders, arms, and legs. It's devastating. But it doesn't have to be this way. 500,000 people have this disease. Many doctors don't even recognize it. The FSH Society is here to help patients get the care they need. They are funding research that is leading to scientific breakthroughs, bringing us closer to treatment and to a cure every day. You can help us get there faster. Learn, act, and give. At FSHSociety.org.
Hey, welcome back to the show, FSH Society Radio Show. I'm Tim, your host, and we just finished a great conversation with Skylar Conover. She was the 2015 Miss Wheelchair USA, but not just that. She really talked about, you know, body image with the disease, dealing with it as a teenager, battling through depression with it, overcoming that. Taking on that great recognition of being the 2015 Miss Wheelchair USA, now engaged, being a parent, and having a phenomenal service dog and a great experience that she shared with that as well. I mean, it just was one thing after the other, and I'm so glad that she came on to share it. Now, also, other things going on in the FSH Society. Today was a big St. Louis member meeting and chapter launch, so I hope they enjoyed that. I think that is either underway or just finishing up out there in St. Louis. November 3rd, New York City member meeting in the community room, New York, New York, Saturday, November 3rd, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. November 4th, the New England chapter meeting with the Wellstone Center, University of Massachusetts Medical, or UMass Medical Center, Worcester, Massachusetts, Sunday, November 4th, 12 noon to 5 p.m. November 5th, FSHD Connecticut Connections. That's Monday, November 5th, 7 to 8 p.m. November 7th, we have a webinar with Stephen Topscott, MD, PhD, Wednesday, November 7th at 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. The Kansas City FSHD Family Day Conference. That's November 10th at the Grid Collaborative Workspace in Overland Park, Kansas, Saturday, November 10th. That's 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Moving on the 11th of November, the Columbus Chapter Meeting, Dublin Community Recreation Center in Dublin, Ohio. That's the 11th from 1 to 3. And finally, November 24th, the Western Washington FSH Community, Saturday, November 24th. That's 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. I believe all these times are Eastern. Don't forget, too, the call to action, right? The call to action for us is basically this, right? When I said it in the beginning of our monologue, it's help raise money, help gain support. There is a big pledge going out there. The board of directors, they are planning a pledge of $400,000, challenging all of us, all the members, to match their gift of that $400,000 that is out there until December 31st. So get the word out, spread the word, tell all those people out there that you love and know, that know that you deal with this, that you need their support. Spread it through Facebook. We're trying to get that treatment to our families by 2025. You can be a direct impact in that. I guess my thank you list is pretty long tonight because I really want to extend still a thank you to the Chicagoland people for welcoming me again last Saturday. Dave Lucas, his wife, Brandy, his kids, his parents, all there. It's a phenomenal event. So thank you, Dave, for doing that, inspiring all of us, including myself, to start our own group here in Milwaukee. And, of course, he's listening still. Thanks for hanging with us. Lucas family, awesome. Special thank you to, of course, our featured guest, Skylar Conover. If you want to know more about service dogs, go to cci.org. So, you know, I looked it up as we were talking, me and Skylar, and Canine Companions for Independence. Since 1975, they've been around. So I would go with them. Sounds like it's working out for her, and at least look into it if you've thought about it. There's the direction to travel. Thanks again all for being here tonight. We're back at it at the last Wednesday of this month in November, where we will have Amanda Rickard, scientist, patient advocate, here on the show on the FSH Society Radio. This show is not about me. It's about all of us, community, working together, bringing positivity in kind of a not a great situation dealing with this disease. But we have each other. Take care, good night, and thanks for listening.